next case, final case this morning is number 21-2137, Low Temp Industries, Inc. v. Duke Manufacturing Company. Okay, Mr. Connelly.
Go ahead.
May it please the court, Kevin Keneally for Duke Manufacturing. The preliminary injunction entered by the district court that took all of Duke's accused products off the market until a trial on the merits was an abuse of discretion on several grounds, and it should be vacated. There's also a motion to stay pending before this panel. We'd ask that the motion to stay be granted if the court vacates. I'm going to start this morning with the focus of all the errors that the court committed with regard to the Finnegan reference, and they were multiple. The court made a clearly factual error by saying that Finnegan was deemed considered by the examiner in the 761 and 970 patents when it clearly was not. And then it imposed a higher burden, citing the Takai case, saying that because it was cited, that we, Duke, had a higher burden to show that Finnegan was relevant. Both are wrong. And then, this often happens, as the court knows in these patent cases, that the claim construction giveth and the claim construction taketh away. And that's exactly what happened here with the insulative air gap construction. On that construction, the court sided with our friends and said that insulative air gap could be a gap that includes foam. Now, on that current construction, Finnegan has that very element, which renders Finnegan an anticipatory reference, not merely one that can contribute to obviousness. The court just got that wrong and treated Finnegan as only part of an obviousness case. So our contention below and here is that the Finnegan reference by itself anticipates 7 of the 8 claims on which we're enjoined, and I can address
The air gap limitation wasn't a basis for the district court's conclusion that Finnegan is unlikely to invalidate the claims, right?
It wasn't one of the bases, no, but what's important is that once the air gap...
It takes that issue off the table.
It takes that issue off the table and renders Finnegan anticipatory and not merely part of the obviousness case.
There were other elements that the district court found were lacking in Finnegan.
And I'd like to turn to those now, if I may, Judge Chen. So after the insulative air gap was off the table, the next it was legal error for the court to construe the term adjacent by adding another word in there. The court said immediately adjacent. Our friends say that to be adjacent under the patent, something must abut or touch. And that's strictly too narrow of a construction. And when you apply it, and then they said, when you apply it to Finnegan, you can see that the wells or the pans, however you want to term them, the pans 18A and 18B that are shown in figure 7 of Finnegan, that they don't abut or touch, or they're too far away, or you can't tell. Well, anyone, you don't need experts on both sides to look at figure 7 of Finnegan and see that they are adjacent. They lie next to...
Well, that depends on what adjacent means.
I suppose it does, Your Honor. But
let's assume it doesn't necessarily mean abutting. It doesn't necessarily require touching the hot pan, touching the cold pan in some way. Then what does it mean? What is the right articulation for adjacent in the context of this patent?
Lying next to. Lying near. That's one of the dictionary definitions.
Well, I thought your contention was based on the specification that it could be 3 inches or more separate.
That's also one of our contentions. When you look at the, if we use the 761 patent, they talk, it's almost as if Low-Temp is trying to talk out of both sides of their mouth and say, to be adjacent, you have to abut or touch. However, in their patent specification, and I think that's it.
You say something like, most preferably 3 inches.
Yes.
Right.
But it could be more. And someone of ordinary skill in the art would understand that there could be variations and the invention could work. So obviously they don't think it's abutting, but I think another key aspect of this is when we look at the 256 patent, and I'll turn now to that.
What's the 256 patent?
Well, that's the third patent that's in the case, but it's not part of the, the 253. I misspoke. The 253 patent, and I'm at appendix 72. This is a patent on which we're not enjoined, but I'd like to direct the court's attention at appendix 72 to column 5, the first claim, about line 43. Each of the wells being isolated thermally from an adjacent well such that at least one exterior wall of one well is spaced an insulated distance from an exterior wall of an adjacent well. They use the term adjacent in a way that clearly connotes that they don't have to abut in the same claim. I mean, in the same patent family. So that's it. Then we think that's strong evidence as well.
Right. But that, I guess it comes down to a judgment call of looking at figure 7 of Finnegan, that diagram, and a fact finder having to ask itself, is pan 18A adjacent to pan 18B? And maybe we don't know. We don't know the answer to that because this is a schematic. And it's not so clear that the schematic itself is illustrating a pan right next to another pan.
Well, Judge Chen, you just said right next to. And so our
okay, next to.
Right. Well, I think that someone of ordinary skill looking at figure 7 on APPX 2185 sees a continuous countertop 14, and there's no dispute in the record that the countertop 14 is one continuous piece, despite the break lines, thereby 82, and that those two pans, 18A and 18B, are next to each other. There's nothing shown in between them. There's nothing else. And we also have to look at figure 7 in the context of the full disclosure of Finnegan. Figure 7 uses the same markings, uses the same description of elements as figure 1. And it's just unreasonable, to read adjacent to require abutment or immediate touching in a way that excludes Finnegan. So that's adjacent, and that's the error that was made. And as you pointed out, it would be up to someone, a fact issue, about whether or not Finnegan teaches that. We think it does, and we think that given the record we have to show a substantial question of invalidity.
Your expert testify as to what adjacent meant in this art?
Adjacent, he understood it in the ordinary dictionary definition of lying near to. So no one has, nothing in the record except competing experts for competing parties have a dispute about whether or not the pans of 18A and 18B.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, in this art, did anybody testify that it was usual to have pans near each other?
They did. I mean, there is evidence that one of ordinary skill would understand that in a counter where you're serving food, the pans would be near each other for space saving.
Yeah.
Right. But again, nothing disqualifies figure 7 when you read it in the context of all of Finnegan from meeting that, from having two pans in the same serving well. And when you look at figure 1, they show that. They show that there are...
quite apart from Finnegan, I guess the point is that in the industry, it was normal to have the pans next to each other. So someone trying to do this would necessarily want to have the pans next to each other.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Someone creating pans for serving would want to have the pans near each other.
They would. And
I mean, quite apart from what Finnegan may or may not show.
Judge Dyke, we understand, and we think of in this art, you would want the pans or the serving wells near each other when you're serving food like this.
There's something unique about Finnegan's disclosure, though. It talks about frosting the top perimeter flange of the cold pan. And so then the question is, how close can you get the hot pan to the cold pan in Finnegan Figure 7 and still maintain the aesthetically pleasing frosting of the flange of the top of the cold pan?
That would be an engineering issue for people who have ordinary skill in the art. And I would just point us back to the specification.
I guess the point would be, the inference would be, that perhaps you can't get the hot pan too close to the cold pan in such a way that you can actually say that the hot pan is adjacent to the cold pan.
Well, that's a matter of degree that you're referring to with respect to the actual engineering of the two pans. But Finnegan talks about having frosting in one pan, but it doesn't preclude or say that you can't have another pan near it that could be that wouldn't at the same time be hot. It wouldn't. Nothing about Finnegan defeats that idea that they could be spaced apart and still meet the claims. So this idea of a narrowing definition of adjacent isn't supported by any claim construction principles. And when Figure 7, when read in light of the whole disclosure of Finnegan, we believe, especially when you compare it to Figure 1, teaches that pans 18A and 18B meet the adjacency. It was also clearly erroneous to conclude that the two pans or wells are not in the same unit or module. This is another contention, and it's just factually wrong. When you look at Figure 7 and relate it to Figure 1, and you look at the entire disclosure,
Did the district court rely on that? And I can't remember, and make a finding that Figure 7 is teaching a hot pan in a different display apparatus than the other pan.
Well, with respect, the district court kind of ran things together in its analysis, so it isn't broken out as neatly, but it does say that Finnegan doesn't show two pans within a single module that can be operated at different temperatures simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think low temp is picking up on, that it's not part of the same module or unit. And if I may, when you look at Figure 1, it's a single food storage display unit with a single self-service food top, with a single countertop, with a pan shown, and with one single display and input device. And then when you look at further down, I think if you look at column 11, this is on APPX 2172, column 11 talks about the unit, and that in the unit, the pans or wells 18A or 18B are clearly treated as separately controlled. So they talk about the two pans being in the unit, and the unit is the buffet unit described elsewhere in Finnegan and also shown in Figure 1. We think that it was clear error for the court to distinguish Finnegan based on this idea that they're not part of the same unit or module. Now I'm on to the clearly erroneous finding that the court couldn't see or didn't see that Finnegan had two wells that are independently heated or cooled. And on this one, in fairness to the examiner, who never saw Finnegan, her reasons for allowance make sense that she didn't see what Finnegan teaches. The district court, on the other hand, had Finnegan right in front of it. And I'm going to refer now to the appendix at 2170. This is what Finnegan teaches in column 9. One control system allows the user to control the temperature of two pans independently. Next sentence. For example, one pan could be hot and the other pan could be cold. Next sentence. The PLC, the controller, will control one pan or two pans depending on the requirements. And so it's quite clear that Finnegan teaches independently heating and cooling two wells or pans. That was a clear error by the district court as well.
Mr. Connolly, the do I remember right, Finnegan came up in the third prosecution?
It was submitted in 2014 in continuing prosecution by our friends in the 253 application.
Yes. Right, and I guess when I quickly looked at that, that's in the appendix. It's just there without anybody commenting on it. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Okay. It's off record. It's not discussed. It's not distinguished.
Okay.
And in fact,
it came in late in the prosecution. Is that right?
I believe it did. And I'll just note, parenthetically, it came in after Lotemp had attempted to enforce the earlier patents against a competitor, Volrath, and Volrath cited and showed them in a letter back, oh, by the way, this Finnegan reference, this makes your patents invalid. And after it's right, sometime after that in 2014 that they submitted it to the Patent Office. So we have one left, and that's Finnegan's wells are thermally isolated. If you look at Figure 4, you can see that Finnegan's pans are thermally isolated. They're thermally isolated because they do the exact same thing that our pans do. We fill the area between the inner wall and the outer wall with foam. So Figure 4, Item 40, is that foam. So on all these grounds, Finnegan has what the patents claim. It anticipates each and every element. And I want to turn briefly to, if I may, before I sit down for rebuttal, claim 4 of the 761.
I think we're out of time unless my colleagues have questions. You can, you'll have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Holloway.
May it please the court, Clay Holloway for LTI. Judge Dyke, I want to start with a comment slash question you posed to counsel that wasn't it just known that you would want to put the pans close to each other? That's actually incorrect. That's precisely what the invention was here, and that's why it's claimed and why the examiner distinguished existing prior art on the idea of adjacent wells being close together but thermally isolated one from another, so one could be hot and the other could be cold. I then want to switch a little bit to Judge Chin, where you said, wasn't there an inference that there could be this switch from hot to cold, and there was some talk about the 3-inch separation. I want to address those together.
Okay, but let me start by asking you, isn't there at least one significant error in the district court's opinion where it says Finnegan does not contemplate an invention with the ability to heat one tray of food in the unit's pan while at the same time cooling another tray in that pan when Finnegan expressly talks about having one pan hot and one pan cold under a single control system?
So, Your Honor, I believe you're referring to basically Appendix 22 to 23 where the district court judge is having this conversation. Finnegan, Figure 7, describes an embodiment where in a single food counter, there is one pan that could have up to seven types of food in it that's hot.
I don't think you're responding to my question. I'm not talking about the adjacency limitation. He says that, or she, whichever it is, I forget, Finnegan does not contemplate an invention with the ability to heat one tray of food in the unit's pan while at the same time cooling another tray. It explicitly contemplates that, right?
No, that is incorrect, Your Honor, respectfully. When Finnegan talks about pans as opposed to trays, it is talking about long sections that would hold, for example, seven trays of food within one pan. That pan must either be hot or cold. Figure 7 describes an embodiment where you could have two such pans in the same food unit. That has nothing to do with how close together they are or whether they're in the single module. It is very clear, as the expert at the hearing agreed, that within a single pan, it's either all hot or all cold. So all those trays of food must either be all hot or hot cold. Now,
I'm getting a little lost. Why wouldn't having in Finnegan, the hot pan and the cold pan, all in one integrated display apparatus unit, not satisfy the limitation, putting aside the adjacency question for a moment?
Because they're not in the same modular frame. The expert agreed, Dr. Homan's expert Duke agreed, that when you're looking at a food bar and you see, for example, a module in the food bar that is capable of doing hot, cold, and freeze next to each other, it's surrounded by a frame, separated by countertop from another module surrounded by a frame. That's two different modules in the same food service bar. That's the difference between the invention. The invention was able to get all of these things in a single modular frame that could be, for example, dropped into a counter.
I'm a little lost, to be honest. You're talking about modules, units, and frames in a way that is a little confusing to me.
So,
I mean, when I think about your patent, I mean, there's not a lot to this patent, but and the claim refers to a frame, right?
Correct. For example, at Appendix 52,
in a module.
Yeah, Claim 1 says a food presentation module generally immobile in use comprising a frame with adjacent first and second wells and described. If you stay in the patent and
so
go
why,
to...
Why, just getting back to Finnegan, mm-hmm. why doesn't Finnegan with the hot pan and the cold pan disclose a hot pan and that cold pan in a single frame as part of one food presentation module?
Because they're separate, as counsel just acknowledged, they're separated by countertop, and you have one pan that is an apparatus, as described by Finnegan. The apparatus 10 is, for example, pan 18A. Apparatus 10 is also pan 18B.
What do you mean, apparatus 10?
In Finnegan, that's how it's described. When Finnegan's describing its invention, it talks about an apparatus 10, the apparatus being a pan, and the components necessary to heat and cool.
Isn't apparatus 10 the entire figure of figure 7?
No, sir. We would say that apparatus 10 is referring...
I mean, when I look at figure 7 and I see the element number 10 with an arrow pointing down, there's just one element 10, and it seems to be pointing to the entire structure illustrated in figure 7.
So if you look
you
to example...
You think there's two tens in here?
Nope. If you look to example figure 1 and figure 2, they are talking about the food service bar being 12, pointing to the whole thing, and included in that is apparatus 10. When you go down to figure 2, it has apparatus 10 numeral pointing at the pan, surrounded by countertop 14. The specification makes clear at page 5 that the countertop is part of food service bar 12, not apparatus 10. So when you go to figure 7, and the second embodiment is being described, where you have a temperature controller that can modulate two different pans, it's not saying the pans are adjacent to each other within
a
frame.
But that's not what the district court said. What the district court said on its face is wrong. He didn't make the distinction that you're making. On page 22, he says, the patent consistently emphasizes the objective, the detailed description explains that the unit described in the patent is provided for maintaining food at a desired temperature, and that the apparatus is expected to be used in either a hot mode of operation or a cold mode. And he says Finnegan doesn't show that. That's not right.
Respectfully, Your Honor, it is correct. When Finnegan talks about the pan, it is referring to one hot water bath and cold refrigerated pan. That pan...
That's what you say. It's not what the district court said.
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's what he's talking about. When the patent... When Finnegan at page 5 talks about being used in either a hot mode operation or a cold mode operation... It is because in Finnegan...
It says one pan could be hot and the other pan could be cold.
That's a... Respectfully, Judge Dyke, that's a separate limitation. When the patent is talking about a pan must either be hot or cold. We concede that figure 7 describes a controller in which two pans could be controlled by the same controller where one is hot and one is cold. The distinguishing feature over Finnegan in that regard is that they are not adjacent in a modular frame. Included in that is that the way Finnegan achieves its invention is not to have a thermally isolated pan. Counsel for Duke referred to the fact that they said that the Finnegan pan works just like theirs in that it's the double walls are insulated with foam. That is incomplete and incorrect. At the red brief at page 30, we reproduce the figure 4 from Finnegan. Element number 36 is a thermally conductive material that extends from the inner wall of the pan to the outer wall of the pan all the way to the top flange. The purpose of the thermally conductive material is, as the district court judge acknowledged, to draw cold energy away from the well so that you can frost the top. So even if we put aside whether it's in a single modular frame, and even if we put aside that it's adjacent, the wells in Finnegan are not thermally isolated so that you can put them in close proximity. They are designed to have heat radiate out as opposed to stay in. The purpose of the invention was to not have that, to have thermal insulation and isolation so that two wells are touching each other on their exterior walls.
Where do you get the construction of adjacent to be immediately adjacent?
The district court...
touching, as some of your experts said.
Did our expert say it? At the preliminary injunction hearing, we presented argument on the extrinsic record as to what adjacency meant at pages 344 and 345 of the appendix. The distinguishing characteristic...
Did your experts in testifying about that take account of the 3-inch separation that's described?
Yes, we did. The expert did discuss that. The 3-inch separation is measured from the inner wall of one well to the inner wall of the adjacent well, not from the exterior wall to exterior wall. And the only way to do that reading is to acknowledge what the preferred embodiment teaches.
Where does the patent say that's the way you measure it?
I'll explain to you, Your Honor. At Appendix 51, this is the specification. Column 4, line 63. The patent says the preferred embodiment
What page?
Appendix 51, Your Honor.
51, yeah.
Column 4, line 63. Talks about the conventional pans that are going to be used in these wells are 12 inches wide. At column 3, line 49, it says the preferred embodiment that's being described throughout is a module that is 58.5 inches long. The preferred embodiment being described in the specification has 4 wells. So right there, we're at 48 inches. Column 3, line 48, the space between the wells is 3 inches. The only way to have 4 12-inch pans spaced 3 inches apart inside a 58.5-inch module is to measure from the inner wall of one well opening to the inner wall of the next well.
Okay, suppose we were to reject that and say it's 3 inches between the pans. There's a fact issue here, right?
I didn't hear the last part of your question.
There's a fact issue. If 3 inches means 3 inches between the pans, the exterior of the pans, there's a fact issue here.
So for dependent claims that specify the requirement that the pans be spaced 3 inches apart, you would have a factual finding concern on whether Finnegan teaches 2 pans 3 inches apart. Finnegan teaches no dimensions and no specifications on those dimensions. So there's nothing in Finnegan to describe how close they can be together. Judge Chin pointed out that there is a problem with bringing those two pans together and
the
maintaining...
The idea is that if they're 3 inches apart, they can still be frosted from the exterior, right?
There's the question of whether they can be 3 inches apart and still have frosting would be a fact question. Yes, Your Honor. And we presented evidence that a person of skill in the art would not be motivated.
There's no finding by the district judge that that's the case, that you couldn't have frosting if it were 3 inches apart, right?
That's correct. Your Honor, the district court judge relied on 3 findings to distinguish Finnegan over the invention. They're not in a singular modular frame, they're not immediately next to or adjacent, and lastly, that they are not thermally isolated. I already explained why they're not thermally isolated. The Finnegan pans include a conductive material designed to not be thermally isolated. The singular modular frame, we've already discussed. They are supposed to be together. They are not together in Finnegan. So there are separate independent reasons aside from the adjacency question. Importantly, the case presented to the district court for invalidity based on Finnegan was not even an element-by-element analysis.
What about these other patents that the district court ignored?
What about the other patents?
Other prior art. He considered only Finnegan. He said, I don't need to consider any of the others. I mean, the others could also raise a substantial question of invalidity, right? Don't they have to be considered?
If they had been presented, Your Honor.
They weren't presented?
No, Your Honor. There is no citation, either the blue brief or the gray brief, to a single page of briefing or argument at the hearing there's a combination.
They submitted their expert's testimony, who did an element-by-element analysis, right?
How would you have found that, Your Honor? The closest they even come to citing in their briefing that there was an element-by-element analysis is in the gray brief at page 16, where they say the district court judge had a table of contents to the declarations available to him to use. They repeatedly said in their briefing that the argument they were presenting for the purposes of the injunction was Finnegan is anticipatory or Finnegan is the base reference for obviousness. And that's at Appendix 6093 in their surreply and 6100 at their surreply. They said the same thing at the hearing. Your Honor, the examiner did the hard work for us. They said the examiner identified three things missing from the prior art. We're going to focus on Finnegan as teaching all of those. So Your Honor's suggestion that Judge Shelp had to go hunting through thousands of pages of declarations to help Duke present its case would be suggesting that anybody who wants to try to show a substantial question of validity needs merely throw the evidence in the record and put their hands up and say, we showed our case. That would be a violation of this court's holding in Titan Tire. Titan Tire says you have to present the validity argument, and then you have to consider the rebuttal arguments in response. So despite Duke presenting an invalidity case at the district court in their briefing and at the oral argument, not in a claim-by-claim fashion, but instead by focusing on the reasons for allowance, we, however, demonstrated that the claims lacked, that Finnegan lacked specific teachings on specific claim elements. And as we just walked through, even adjacency aside, there are independent reasons for the district court to have properly concluded Finnegan is not anticipatory. They're not arranged in the same way they're arranged in the claims, nor does it get to the obviousness part for many reasons. You'd be frustrating the purpose of Finnegan by bringing them close together. You would be following the inventor's own motivation. The only evidence in the record of a person wanting to put these pans this close together is the inventor's own testimony during prosecution.
Okay,
my time is running.
We're about out of time. Let's throw the question. Okay, thank you. Mr. Keneally, you've got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few brief points. On the truffle hunting, we submitted an expert's declaration that was fulsome and complete with regard with our opposition to the motion, and we were time-limited, as we are today, in a six-hour, one-day hearing to put on witnesses. If we had had 4 days, we would have put on every single one of our invalidity defenses through oral testimony. But it was before the district court, and he simply ignored it. That's one thing. The second thing is I'd refer the panel to the appendix at 2257.
Did you argue the declaration to the district court?
I'm sorry?
Did you argue the declaration to the district court?
We told the court there were many other base references, such as Richmond and Tipton, that we were also relying upon at the oral argument. We did, absolutely. I wanted to move on to this question about whether someone would know from Figure 7 how far apart to put the two pans, 18A and 18B. Appendix 2257 and 2258 is our expert's declaration showing what a POSA would know after looking at Figure 7 about how you could space the two pans and address the issue of frosting. But the other thing, and this is really important, the thermally isolated term in the asserted patent claims, it's qualitative. It's not quantitative. If they had said thermally isolated to meet an NSF standard, or so that you could have one pan be a certain degrees and keep another pan, if that was part of what they actually claimed, that would be one thing. But they didn't. All we have to show in the prior art is thermally isolated pans. And the presence of some conductive material in Finnegan doesn't defeat the fact that it is thermally conductive. I think those are the points I wanted to make, unless the court has questions about irreparable harm or other aspects of this. We believe this case is clearly one of abusive discretion in failing to find that we had submitted a substantial question of validity. And of course, as the court knows, failure on the first element of a preliminary injunction requires reversal.
Okay, thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.